Welcome everyone to Road to Aintree. It's a special spin-off show from Road to Cheltenham. I don't know, what's it? It's a bit like Frasier to Cheers, Ruby. Is that, were you a Cheers or Frasier watcher? No, you clearly weren't, were you?
I can remember both, Lydia, but they were different programmes. Cheers was in a pub, but Frasier was in a house.
Well, this is the programme in a house. Yeah.
Houses.
Yeah, well, I think they've established that they can see that you're in County Kildare, I'm in London, and we're really revved up for the Road to Aintree. We're going to have a look at the major races over the 3 days, but focus primarily, of course, on the world's greatest race, the Randox Grand National. And what do you think of the edition as a whole this time around, Ruby?
I think it's very competitive. I think it's brilliant. There's a couple of horses in there. Conceivably ahead of the handicapper. I think it adds spice to the race. You know, people love to think that they're getting on one that's ahead of the handicapper. It doesn't always work out, but I think it adds spice to the race. I think it's competitive top to bottom. I think Bristol Demai puts a good shape on it. He's a good horse to have at the top of the weights. And there'd be a good spread in weights carried, which you like to see in a handicap. I hate condensed handicaps. A handicap is supposed to bring horses together. So from 11-10 to probably a bottom weight of 10-1, 10-2, I think it needs to be that bigger weight range.
Yeah, I agree. We haven't had a full weight range, certainly not the last couple of years, almost a couple of years back. But yeah, I think we could have a full weight range here for the National. And earlier on in the season, we were talking about what it takes to win a modern National. And you were saying how the modifications to the course have changed the kind of jumper that you need. And I thought we'd recap that and have a look at Tiger Roll's two victories in 2018 and 2019. Of course, sadly, we're not going to see him this year. He's going to be running in the bowl instead. But what have you taken from the way that Tiger Roll negotiates the course to tell us what is required from a horse to win it?
Look, there's been loads of modifications to Aintree over a considerable period of time, and all for the betterment of the sport. And there's no point in arguing. You can be a traditionalist as you want, but the Grand National is still a race that's growing. So you have to say the modifications have worked. And the fences were the biggest change. People would perceive to have been the biggest change. Obviously, it's a different style of jumper now. You can get much lower at the Aintree fences, which did suit Tiger Roll. Would he have won an All National? Who knows? But he's a very low accurate jumper. And he just brings the palm with him the whole time. You never see him jumping over the fence. He always jumps through. And as you keep watching him, if you keep looking at Davy Russell and look at his helmet, his cap never comes above the horse's either side of him. His head always stays so low down because Tiger Roll isn't getting very high. But I do think more so in the 2019 Lydia edition, if you watch where Ratvinden Magical Light and Tiger Roll are going to Beecher's on the first circuit. If you look at the three of them, they're almost together, one behind the other. Ratvinden's beside Magical Light and Tiger Roll is behind them. And they stay in that shape throughout the race. So what does that tell you how to win the race? Like, from the Beecher's the first time to the third last in the first circuit, they're almost in a triangle, jumping the 14th fence, the 15th. They're still together, back to Beecher's second time. It's like they've followed each other all the way. And if you watch Ratvinden at Valentine's, you can see the mistake he can now get away with that you couldn't in the past. If you watch the one after Valentine's, how Tiger Roll gets low and stumbles, but he still lands galloping, and he does the same with the next fence. He pecks out, but still manages to keep galloping because the fences aren't tripping you over like they used to. But also in modern Grand Nationals, and I think, which is a bigger thing that gets overlooked, is because of the bypasses and the areas that Aintree have created to catch loose horses. There's no loose horses in Grand Nationals anymore. And without loose horses, the people riding the horses on the front end don't have to slow down to second guess where the loose horses are going. So the pace stays constant. And that's made it a way more of a stamina race.
Yeah, so bizarrely, by dropping in trip, it's actually more an end-to-end stamina test. There's no stop-starts.
No, there's no stop starts because, and that's to do with the loose horses. Yeah. I think if you put the loose horses back in, they will find their way to the front of the field, and then people automatically think, Jesus, are they going to stay in the race? Are they going to run out? So you have to pull back from them, and that's what used to slow Grand Nationals down.
So what adjustments therefore have the riders had to make to this the modern National? Are they having to sort of take breathers at different points in the race?
Definitely. And I think where you get them now are at the turns. So if you think the race flows over the first five fences to Beecher's Brook. But when you land over Beecher's, you have to turn to the left to the Fine Haven, which is quite narrow. And then you turn left again to the Canal Turn, which is obviously a 90-degree angle. So that is where the race is now slowed down compared to in the past because of loose horses. So you're going to get your breather at the bottom of the track. And then when the face is back to Valentine's on the first circuit, the race picks, the pace picks up again and continues pretty much up to the chair where it gets narrow again and everyone slows down a little. You jump the chair, the water, turn the bend, the race opens up and it goes all the way to Beecher's before it steadies once more. And then it becomes a slog from the Canal Turn home. And I think jockeys have ended up riding it a bit more like the Mile Make horse now. You have to be quite close to the pace without trying to commit, because it's a hard race to make up ground in now. And you don't ever see horses flashing home on the Mile Make horse or in the Grand National. You can see the one that's catching up coming for a long time. It never, you're thinking, is it going to get there? Will it get there? It never catches your eye like in Cheltenham where you see one shooting out of the pack like a champ in the RSA, or you see it in county hurdles or Coral Cups. You see horses flashing. You don't see that very much in entry. You can see a horse making up ground, but you're thinking, will it get there? It's always slow motion because, I don't know, entry being so level, it does encourage horses to race earlier.
Yes. And so my perception from the outside is that from a jockey's point of view, it's kind of like get over the first 3 to 5 and then, you know, work out where you are and, you know, neither do too much nor get too far off the pace from that point onwards. Would that be fair?
Yeah, exactly. And if anything, always try to get yourself a little closer. If you can jump closer, don't give it away. Don't take back. You know, it's get yourself, walk your way as close to the front as you can and then just sit there. Don't set sail or commit. Is the basics of it. Not that easy, but if you can get as close to the front and then don't set sail, that's usually a start.
And did you have a position you like to be in on this course?
Not particularly. Not particularly. I tended to go where there was less, if that makes sense. If everyone was hell-bent on being on the inside of the track, I would move to the middle. If everyone wanted to be middle outside, I would move back to the inside. I was not that hedging your bets. I tended to go where there was less horses to bring me down.
That's the element of randomness that you have with a 40 runner field. Yeah, so you were looking for fewer horses getting in the way, essentially.
Basically, yeah. I would go where I thought. And there was no point in looking at individuals thinking, I don't want to be behind him, because you were guaranteed to get stuck behind one then that you didn't want to be behind. So I would go where, and hopefully go where there was less. And on landing over one fence, I would try and find a semicircle in front of me with nothing in it. If that meant moving to the left or moving to the right, I would manoeuvre my way like that, always going a bit from the left to the right to try and have nothing in front of me going to the next fence.
That's very different from the regulation style race, isn't it? Where you want to race quite tight and get cover.
Yeah, it is. And that's what probably, when you look at different races, you think how much pace is in a race or how little pace. Because the Grand National course is so wide, even if you have a considerable amount of front runners, they can be almost thinking you're in front in the Grand National, but you could actually be 8th if you froze the shot. But it can feel like you're nearly in front.
I was going to bring this up because there are a lot of potential front runners in this year's edition, aren't there? There's the likes of Bristol de May, Yala Enki, Magic of Light, Acapella Bourgeois, Lord de Menil, Cloth Cap himself, Ami Desbois, just to name some of them. They're all want to be towards the fore. But as you say, there is that element of fanning in the National because there's so many straight parts to the track.
There are. And because you can get that much width, if you get those 7 horses you've mentioned or 8 horses, but they're spread across the track, each rider could feel they're almost in front. Yeah, one would be in front and one would be 8 because of the width of the track. Yeah. And that can sometimes take away competition to actually be in front.
We've talked about how you don't want to get too far behind in the way that the modern race works out. The likes of horses that come from a long way back would be Annabelle Fly, typically. The Storyteller tends to in his races. Class Conti would be another. Is there a scenario you think where they could go a bit too hard up front and those horses could actually get into it this time around? Or is that just a disadvantage, that run style?
I think it's just a disadvantage now. And even with the modifications, there's so fewer fallers as well. So in all likelihood, if 40 line up, there's a fair chance 30-odd are going to go out in the second circuit. And it just gives the horses that are drop-out, hold-up horses, so many horses to pass and actually get by. Whereas in older Grand Nationals, when there was a pile-up here and a pile-up over there, all of a sudden you could head out in the second circuit with 14 runners or 16 And it didn't matter if you were at the back because you were only at the back of 16. You weren't at the back of 30.
Right. Shall we start going through the leading contenders, shall we?
And we have a go.
We'll start with the favourite, shall we? Clothcap, who's a very, very short price. And he announced himself as a potential national horse with a splendid victory in the Ladbrokes Trophy earlier this season. We've seen him since once winning at Kelso. What do you make of his credentials?
Sure, look, he's the obvious favourite. Do I think there's any value in him at the price he's at now? Not really. In a 40-runner handicap, he wouldn't be for me, but his run style suits. You see that in Newbury. He jumps out, plenty of pace. He's in the, close enough to the inside, but he's able to jump his way into the lead. And he was real powerful athletic jumping. He was always in control of the Ladbrokes Trophy, and he has bags of stamina. And even I know he looks so genuine or so honest, but he's low head carriage and he's trying. He looks like he's always trying for Tom Scudamore. Very, very clean jumper is the other thing. You don't see him making too many mistakes. And he's the obvious one. Like, but he won the Ladbrokes Trophy off a mark of 136. He got raised to 148, which he won off at Kelso. And he's since gone up again, which makes him look absolutely thrown in. But yeah, he's a worthy favourite. Is he a 4-1 shot? I don't know.
He is well in. Whether he's as well in as the official figures would have you say, I'm not so sure. But he's got so many positive attributes. I mean, as you say, we know he stays as well because just at the age of 7, he was a rallying third in the Scottish Grand National over 4 miles. So, and he's got that clean way of jumping, which I like that adjective. I think clean is exactly the right adjective for his jumping.
Yeah, it is. He handles or likes or seems to be a horse that wants better ground as well. I mean, he was 8th in last year's Kim Muir, wasn't it, behind Milan Native? Was third to throw it on at Cheltenham in October. And since then, he's had those two really impressive performances. Look, his Scottish National run back in 2019 was it's a good, honest run. But he's obviously improved a bit with age too.
Is there a risk that he does too much too soon?
There could be. But that'll depend on the shape of the race and jumps at the likes of Valentine's and the two fences immediately after Valentine's are very important in Grand Nationals now. They were always important, but you make mistakes there when the race is starting to quicken and you find yourself not having time to recover from the mistake and having to force yourself back into the race without having had the time to get over the mistake. So jumps at Valentine's, fifth last, fourth last, third last. They're very important though.
Let's move on to Burrow Saint. Now, as I was researching him, I was thinking, now this is the perfect Grand National candidate. But I came across a flaw. Let's stick with the positive stuff first. He won the 2019 Irish Grand National. I think he's got the ideal jumping and run style for the Grand National.
So do I. I rode him in Ferry House and I taught entry. We'd pick him up here in the Irish National at the 7th fence where he makes a slight mistake. Now, it was a bit wide on the track, but going to the 8th fence any second now in the green colours of the white cap, he departs, makes a very uncharacteristic mistake for him. He falls and allowed me to get into a lovely position going to the 9th fence. And that ultimately then had me in the right place all the way because it was only through one horse falling. I suppose that to say one person's loss, another person's gain. And he arrived cantering into the home straight then, going to the third last. At Capella Bourgeois, who would re-oppose him, was just behind him. But I agree with you, he's through the air. He's an ex-French chaser. He doesn't give a jump any more air than it needs. And it's always through the air. Got a bit lonely going to the last, jumped it well, and stayed on well to beat Isle of Hope and Dreams with At Capella Bourgeois back in third. Now, he was coming to this race last year, was called off. So this year, it's been the aim for him again. His couple of runs early in the season were pretty ordinary over hurdles. And then he had a better run in the Bobby Joe and soft ground behind At Capella Bourgeois. But as you're about to say, what about going right? If you watch At Capella Bourgeois and Burrow Saint here from the back of the second last and watch the effort Paul Talman is having to make to try and keep Burrow Saint on the outside of At Capella Bourgeois, he eventually gives up and allows him over to the other side of the track, which is going right. At Capella Bourgeois wins well, Burrow Saint the second, but he did show a tendency to want to go right. My counter argument for that would be, I think on good ground, he's a better horse, a much better horse. And I think Ferry House, Bobby Joe Chase was heavy. I think he hung because he was struggling in the ground.
Yeah, I can buy that he hung because he was getting tired. I definitely get that. But it does expose to me a wanting to go to his right. And so then I started to look back over his form, and he's raced almost exclusively right-handed for Willie Mullins. He raced at a toy, and he had just and jumped right at a toy there. And he raced in the Martin Pipe, but he got sort of squeezed out at the very first hurdles. That was a non-race, really. So we haven't got much evidence of him going left-handed. And when he has, he's adjusted right. I just wonder, you know, 30 fences of going that way, whether that night might just take the edge off him.
Yeah, and it never crossed my mind. So, and I had ridden him twice, one on him in Limerick and one on him in Ferry, so one in Maidenhead, on him in Punchestown. I had never noticed, but you have the evidence to show it.
Yes, it's scant evidence. It's one race at Auteuil, and it's the closing stages of the Bobby Joe. But, you know, it's just something that's in my mind, bearing in mind the price he was, particularly as I was so inanimate with him until I found that. Let's move on to Any Second Now, shall we? Your dad's horse, who came back to form last time over 2 miles. Tell me about the arc of his season.
He had 2 runs over hurdles. He was both at Navan, weren't they? Started the year, obviously, since last year again. He won the Woodlands Chase in Nace, where he beat Articulum, Cadmium, Hardware, those kind of horses. You know, he was coming to this race. It was called off, so he started behind Barnaby Dawn in Nace, then went to Nav into that valuable handicap hurdle of Flooring Porter 1, lined up in the Tiestes, broke well and travelled well for a circuit in the Tiestes, but in the real heavy ground, he never seemed to go. He was pulled up at the top of the hill, and then he went back to the Webster Cup in Navan, 2 mile race. We can watch him in that. Jumped a bit high at the first, which would be a bit of a concern. Was much better at the second fence in the Webster Cup. But I think when they turn into the back straight and you watch him at the fourth and fifth fences, he's much slicker and quicker through the air. But that's obviously going at 2 mile speed, and it's a tactic Dad has used in the past. He often dropped Papillon back down in Trip and Seabass. Seabass won the Woodlands Chase before finishing third in the Grand National. He likes them to be a bit sharper and to be able to travel and hold a position. And, you know, he ultimately beats Castle Grace Paddy quite impressively in the end. Castle Grace Paddy was second in Ferry House the other day. And you're thinking, well, that's 2 mile form. What form has he got over a trip? Well, if you go back to the Kim Muir in 2019, Derek O'Connor rides him, and he shows stamina here. He travels well into the race, goes to the second last on the inside, jumps through, down to the last fence, absolutely pings it, and quickens up readily. So he has form over 3.25 miles. He's shown the pace to win a 2 mile chase. The only thing about him, Lydia, is a lot of his form is better on slower ground.
Yes. So you're wondering whether he can hold his position in that kind of way, perhaps, when the pace quickens?
Yeah, I think, I just wonder, is he an effective horse on good ground? I'd say whatever cold snow is forecast would be appreciated by my father.
I prefer him on a left-handed track as well. I've thought that about him since his novice chasing days. The stewards, after, is it the Webster Cup last time? Called your dad in to ask about the improvement in form after the horse was pulled up in the Thaises. And your dad said that he enjoyed himself more in a smaller field, and he didn't like the larger field of the Thaises so much. I thought this was an unusual reason to give after you've won the 23-runner Kim Muir and are heading for the 40-runner Grand National.
I would agree with you. The Thaises, Lydia.
Thaises, sorry. Let's talk about the elephant in the room in terms of the Grand National and when the weight publication are, because you see lots of horses in this race, and Any Second Now wouldn't be alone in this, whose seasons are campaigned around the publication of the Grand National weights in mid-February. And it means that lots of them race over hurdles or don't even run until after the publication of the weights. Are you happy with the system?
No, and I don't know what's the right system. I would probably bring the weights out the 1st of January with mandatory penalties. I then wouldn't give the handicapper discretion either. I would bring out mandatory penalties. I think it's great for the race that people think Clot Cap has £14 in hand and people will just simply follow him because of that theory. I would make them mandatory penalties, £5 for every win. It would also give people lower down the chance to say, well, you know what? If I could win that, I might get in. It could make other races more competitive. I wouldn't let it be handicapper's discretion now. I would make them only mandatory penalties, but I would have the weights out earlier. Yeah.
Let's move on to Manila Times, shall we? Now, again, I was very, very keen on Manella Times. I really like what he's achieved this season. And we can talk about him really in tandem with Farclas, can't we? Because they've both run in a couple of significant handicaps at Leopardstown, one over 3 miles at Christmas, the other over 2.5 at the Dublin Racing Festival.
Yeah, the Paddy Power and the Leopardstown Chase. Yeah, look, if we picked them up in the Paddy Power, Farclas in the middle of your shot, the grey horse and the Jigginstown colours, Manila Times to the right on the inside at the second fence, and they're both quite quick. Now, the camera moves to the side on, and you can see Manila Times on the inside, how quick he is at fences five and again at six. And then if you flick it on to the seven fence, Farclas, the grey horse to the left, he's low and economical. So they both seem to have the right technique. They're both low, economical, quick jumpers. If you look at the third last, the overhead shot going to the third last, that's the kind of shot you're probably going to see somewhere this week in entry. So many horses in it. So both of these horses are used to that. At the second last, Farclas jumped it well. But look, the race was steadily run and it suited the horse in front, Castle Bomb West, who sprints off the home turn and Manila Times chases him and Farclas finishes third. And I kind of think, well, what's going to turn that form here? And lo and behold, they met at the Leopardstown, the Dublin Racing Festival, in the Leopardstown Chase. On this occasion, Farclas was quite high at the first. He's jumping and been much slicker in the Paddy Power. At the third last then, Manila Times was ridden a bit differently. He was held up more over 2.5 than he was over 3 miles. If you go to the third last, watch Manila Times on the inside. He flies the last ditch and lands beside Farclas. Farclas makes a mistake at the second last, where Manila Times is much quicker. And off the home turn, Jack Kennedy then has to use Farclas and gets back in front of Manila Times going to the last. He gets in front, then Manila Times gets by him and off you go, comes and beats the two of them. But they're well tied together. But I personally think Manila Times will finish in front of Farclas. He has the last twice and I think he will again.
Yeah, in that straight match bet, I tend to agree with that. Farclas will be following the Tiger Roll precedent of winning the Triumph Hurdle and going and going on to win the National. But I just thought he was flattening out a little bit in the closing stages, both occasions. But the thing for both of them is they are totally unproven at 3 miles plus. I mean, most national winners have demonstrated an ability to win over at least 3 miles before they come into this race. Neither of them have actually managed to win at that distance or further yet.
No, but they haven't been asked too many times either. Farclas definitely hasn't. And Manila Times, I'm trying to think, has he ever run further than three? No, he hasn't. Cork, they haven't. There's not that many of those type races in Ireland for those horses either, Lydia. You had the Portistown, the Cork National, the Irish National, and there's a 3-6 chase in Punchestown that they could qualify in. There's only four races over that I can think off the top of my head that are raced. The National Trial in Punchestown is the fifth one that are raced beyond 3 months.
I suppose what I'm asking is I take the point about lack of opportunity, but is there a sort of grit that you get for this kind of contest, from having experienced this kind of contest in another form?
Yeah, I suppose there is. It's like someone running a marathon for the first time, isn't it? But they have, I think when you look at both horses, they definitely have enough of runs. They both have had three runs this season. Manila Times started in the Stall in September and he's had the two runs in Leopardstown in December and February, and Farclas has been even busier than that. He's had quite a few runs. He even ran at the Cheltenham Festival since Leopardstown. He had his first run in Punchestown in November, so he's had four starts. So they should have a season of racing and hard fitness in the tank by now.
Let's move on to Kimberlite Candy, shall we? Now this is
you fancy Kimberlite Candy, so I'm going to ask you about Kimberlite Candy. Why are you making the case for Kimberlite Candy?
Well, I backed him in December for this race, and I think in many ways he is the ideal type. I just think that he would prefer deeper ground. The one thing that I worry about him is him holding his position in the race when the race really starts to develop. But we've seen the form of him over the national fences. He ran second in the Beecher Chase, and prior to that he won the Warwick Classic Chase, so we know he's got the kind of stamina for the job. It's just in those faster ground conditions, I just wonder about him holding his position. What do you think?
I agree with you. He's been placed in two Beecher Chases, even behind Walk on the Mill and Walk in the Mill and View Leon Rouge. I just think he got well beaten by two much older horses. Now, maybe he's getting harder himself. I did think when he won that chase in Warwick with Richie McLernan that I thought, yeah, he could be a national horse, but I just would like to have seen him beaten Leon Rouge, even.
Yeah, Leon Rouge. I go, yeah. Easties won.
Yeah. Why not?
Equalises.
Yeah. When you couldn't beat him, why are you going to win the Grand National?
I think he wants more of a test of stamina than that. I mean, I think you see Vieux Leon Rouge can't stay the Grand National trip, can he? He's had several goes at it. I think Kimberlite Candy is an even more thorough stayer than that. But hence the flip side to that is, I'm not sure he's going to hold his position. If it was really, if he's a deep Grand National, I'd really quite fancy him because I think everything else is right.
Yeah, pulled up in an Irish National behind Boris Saint. Yeah, probably on soft ground. I can't make a strong argument for him as you're making anyway.
You know, it's fair enough. He lost his position at Borough Saint Grand National. He lost his position on faster ground, you know, and couldn't hold his position. He's older now and maybe a little bit tougher, but nonetheless, yeah, absolutely, that's the flaw. Let's move on to Potter's Corner. Of course, he won the virtual Grand National last year, so he's got something to live up to. and also, he missed Cheltenham, didn't he? He was intended to run in the cross-country chase and have the Tiger Roll-type preparation, but he was withdrawn with an inflammation.
Yeah, and has to overcome a pretty poor run behind Brinkley on his last start at Exeter. Prior to that, he'd run behind Imperial Alcazar at Warwick. That was in a hurdle race as well. I don't know, Lydia. Like, he was third to Kingswell Theatre in the cross-country race back in November 2020. And he won the Welsh National in 2019. Like, other than winning the virtual Grand National, he hasn't had a really strong run in quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's the type of horse that we were just discussing about horses that have been laid out for this race. And I think, you know, that's the kind of campaign he's had, isn't it? You know, two intended cross-country starts, two hurdle starts. We haven't seen him over regulation fences since he won the Welsh National in 2019. But he's also won the Midlands Grand National as well. I mean, that was unusually testing ground on that occasion. So we know that he's absolutely at his best when put under a thorough test of stamina, which is what this is.
He is, but the horses that we're talking about that have been laid out for the race or have targeted the race, their last run has been good. Boris Saint was second, you're talking about any second now, he won. Like, we haven't seen Potter's Corner since Exeter. He's missed Cheltenham. You just wonder, is the prep going as the way that Christian Williams would like it? And for me, he has one stat that does worry me. He's only had two runs this season. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look back at Grand National winners, they've had more runs than that.
Okay, let's move on to another Welsh Grand National winner, shall we? The reigning Welsh Grand National winner, who is Secret Reprieve. And at the time that we're talking, he still needs three to come out in order to get into the race. But he was a comfortable winner in Chepstow in January, wasn't he?
He was a very comfortable winner. And I thought he got a good ride too from Adam Wedge to beat the two amigos. Prior to that, he'd won in Chepstow as well. And then obviously in Haydock, when Robbie Power rode him, he fell behind Snow Leopardess, which I think was uncharacteristic. I don't think that would worry me. We looked at that fall at the time before he went to the Welsh National, and he just seemed to fall over. He's had plenty of runs. He's had the three runs required. Haven't seen him since the Welsh National in January, but stamina is assured, and Welsh National winners, Silver Birch won a Welsh National, Earth Summit won a Welsh National. It can be done.
Yes, again, best form on testing ground. So that's something that he's going to have to prove, his versatility in terms of holding his position within a different type of race.
Yeah, he's only had the two goals on anything other than soft or heavy. And that was in Exeter last March behind Truckers Lodge, and in Aintree when he came here in November 18 in a bumper. So most of his runs, he obviously has shown connections that he appreciates the testing, because they haven't won him much better.
Yeah, so it's kind of an unknown rather than definitely a negative for him. But, you know, if he gets in, he's clearly a player, isn't he? Let's move on to this. Sorry, go on, you were going to say.
I think at 43 at this stage, I think he'll get in.
Do you?
I'd be confident enough, yeah.
Okay, all right. Let's move on to Discorama, shall we? So often the bridesmaid, isn't he? He hasn't won since November 2018, but he has got, isn't it, three Cheltenham Festival places to his name?
Yeah, he has. Look, you can watch him look in the National Hunt Chase, where he was favourite, I think, the same day. He arrived to beat Le Broil, jumping the last and gets in front halfway up the run, and that was over 3 miles, 7.5 furlongs, and Jamie Codd gets a renewed effort out of LeBroyle and just gets back in front of him. He then went to Punchestown, where he ran in the Grade 1 novice chase behind Delta Walk, and he plugged on that day to finish second. He eventually gets by a Plutar down the straight, but Delta Walk was a runaway winner. He was campaigned lightly enough then, headed back to Cheltenham last season to run in the Ultima Handicap Chase, where he ultimately finishes third behind the conditional. Now he turns in, the conditional's on his inside. It's a bit of condensed finish. Discorama's on the outside. Kiddie Smart gets involved. It was a really good race, that race. The conditional Vindication was in there. It's a competitive handicap. That Ultima was a particularly competitive one. But he doesn't make up the ground the conditional does from the home turn to the line and gets the third. Now people are making the case from, he only has 10 stone 6, but he's only had the 2 runs this season as well, and that hard fitness that's required in an end-to-end Grand National now, look, something's going to break that stat, but it's there. Grand National winners have had 3 runs or more in the season.
Yeah, and it was a disappointing run at Cheltenham, and they tried him over the extended 3-mile 3. He just ran a little bit too free, and we haven't seen him since. Are you suggesting that he doesn't find a great deal in a finish?
Yeah, I am. I think he flatters to deceive. You think he's going to, you watch him one day, you think, God, when he goes up and trip, he'll take off. But he just doesn't seem to. I could see him being placed, but I just think he doesn't have a way of winning.
Sometimes those horses are just one paced and need a marathon trip, aren't they? But other times they sucker you in, and actually, you know, it would be exactly the same no matter what the trip was.
Yeah, no, but look, maybe an end-to-end race like the Grand National might suit him, where he's kind of half behind the bridle for most of the race, and it's an extreme stamina test. Maybe that is what he wants.
Okay, let's move into some other horses, shall we, and just pick out some others in the race. Milan Native, I wanted to mention to you, because on the basis of last season's Kim Muir, you could give him a really strong chance. Also, he ran at Galway and Wexford earlier on this season perfectly well, but he didn't jump at all well in the Ultima this time around. He just never went with any kind of fluency in the race.
No, he didn't. And as you said, he started the season with a bang when he beat Discorama at Galway, then went to Wexford and was second to Manila Indo. And Manila Indo kicked him out of the way on that occasion, but still, it's a fair enough run. Pulled up then in the Portstown Handicap Chase at Ferry House, ran bad in the Paddy Power. He was 15th. But he kept going in the Ultima, Lydia, but you'd like, as you said, to have seen him jumping better. Now, in his back form, there is a reason as to why he could get involved. But you're going into his back form, like you are with Potter's Corner, like you probably are with Discorama. You're going a long way back to find it. I would want something a little bit more relevant, or current even.
Okay, well, you're not going to like the next one I'm going to throw at you. And this is just purely a sort of horse that might be overpriced and sort of might be a big sort of place chance, because he's a bit old now. The 12-year-old Black Lion, who at one point was well fancied to win the National. He went off favourite in 2017, finishing fourth behind One for Arthur. He's won a Beecher Chase later the following season as well. Things didn't go well for him behind Tiger Ollie. He was brought down, I think, at the first in the 2018 National. And then he didn't really, he struggled a little bit subsequently. But now he's with a different yard. He's with the Skelton Yard now, having been at Nigel Swiss and Davis and briefly with Phil Kirby. But he's now at the Skelton Yard. He's got a little bit better with each start. I just think he could run well. He could outrun his odds. I'm not making any grand argument for him. I just think that, you know, of the horses around his price in the betting, he actually has a chance of maybe hitting the frame in one of those, you know, where bookmakers play down to 12th or whatever it is they play down to these days in the National.
Noted.
You don't like it at all, do you? Go on, try and convince me of one. Go on.
He's probably not for me, Black Lion. Look, but 12-year-olds will go and win. Maybe Class Conti. He's 33-1. All right, you've gone for a 40-1 shot. Do I have to go for one that's longer than yours? He's been placed in the last two Testis chases. He was second to Total Recall in January 20. And he was third this year behind Coco Beach. He ran well behind Scoremar in the Leinster National at Naas just before Cheltenham. I think he does improve on good ground. I think he does lack early pace, so he could end up quite a distance back in the race, which to me would be a negative for him winning it. But if we're looking to one backing it each way to finish in the first. How many are you getting with?
I was joking. First eight, maybe.
First eight. In the first eight, I think he'll be coming home well and could run into the eight anyway.
Yeah, my concern about him would be getting too far back early on. That's the note I made about him. But you'll be pleasing Foslas Boyo, who needs to improve his tact, because he has tweeted Racing TV to say, "I really fancy Klas Conti for the Grand National. Consistent performer and the big weights in the good handicaps this season. Step up in trip, nice weight, and a horse with plenty of experience I think could go well. What does Ruby think? Or Lydia Hislop, but more interested in Ruby's thought."
And what he also has, Lydia, actually, he's an ex-French chaser. He has the right way of jumping for entry too. So, yeah, whoever Foslas Boyo is, I can make your case for it. But I think he will get too far back to win, but could run in the money.
Yeah, well, plus that's what you've got ground to make up with me, mate. Now, Rob Chadwick likes Potter's Corner. Potter's Corner has been a long-term fancy, he says. Jumps well, stamina assured, and a lovely racing weight. Away from the big race, we're going to talk about later on in the show, he likes Senior Citizen for the Topham. Took the fences well back here in December. So a student of the national fences there. Bristol Demai is getting quite a lot of love. So John Ingleson says, flat track, will gallop and jump everything else into submission. Stokey 73 says, with all that weight. And John Ingleson counters, Neptune did it. Very similar profile. What do you think about Bristol?
Yes, and I don't know why it is. And I'm running the risk. No, I used to listen to emphasis and watching this anyway. But
He is, Ruby. He surely is.
Is he?
Can't you?
It's just such a long time since Bristol Demai has won a race in the spring.
Do you really go for that?
I do.
Go on. The theory being that he needs deep ground?
No, different yards, different trainers, different horses come to hand at different times of the year. It's a long time since he's won a race in the spring.
He's been kept relatively fresh, hasn't he? It'll be 63 days since he ran second behind Native River at Sandown. That might help.
Yeah, and he's had good runs, Lydia, in the spring. Don't get me wrong, but he just hasn't managed to win a race. And could Bristol Demai finish fourth, fifth, sixth in the Grand National? Yeah, I think he could, but I would be surprised if he wins.
And you'd be slightly worried about his jumping style. Not that he'll you know do anything wrong in terms of making mistakes, but more that it's not that efficient style of jumping.
He could be a bit clean. And Neptune, as somebody quite rightly said, did do it. He came from a long way off the pace to do it. I can't see Bristol Demai being ridden that conservatively to be finishing strongly like Neptune was.
Okay, Scott Christie likes Mr. Malarkey. Quicker ground, up with the pace if he jumps the first few well and gets into a rhythm. Then I think he's a cracking price at 40-1. He says he's got good form with the conditional, and it would be the perfect ending to Colin Tizard's training career. What do you think?
It would be a romantic send-off, all right. Mm-hmm. What do I think? I think he's right. What happens over the first two fences? Mr. Malarkey, it's kind of whatever side of the bed he gets out on. He has good days, but he has shocking days too.
Yeah, he unseated in the Ladbrokes Trophy, didn't he? But he ran really well behind Clondalkin Castle, that staying on.
Yeah, Kempton, behind Taking Risks at Doncaster, he was never really going. I just can see him on occasions where he's tuned in, and then there's races where you're thinking he was 25 miles.
Okay, how about Yalarenki? What do you think about Yalarenki? Could another one of the ones to go to the four has been in good form this season?
Goes along up there, led them for a long way in Sandown behind Native River, beat it to Cap Fitz and Taunton. He's a good style of race and he's a good jumper. Was third, I think, in the Welsh National, was he, behind Secret Reprieve? Does he have anything in hand? I doubt it. He looks well exposed and he is what he is, but I'd imagine Bryony Foss rides him and she'll get a good thrill anyway.
How about the Storyteller? He's such a superb horse, and the last time we saw him was fifth in the Stayers Hurdle at the Cheltenham Festival. He's mixed hurdles and fences all season. Could he do it?
He's a remarkable horse, but his run style is coming from off the pace. Mm-hmm. And you just wonder nowadays, can you actually come from as far back as he likes to be? Maybe they'll try and ride him a bit closer than that. But he does seem to be a finisher, and it's a while since we've had one of those win the National.
How about the likes of horses that you know well, like Acapella Bourgeois, Alpha Dizobo, Balco de Flo, Shattered Love?
Acapella Bourgeois is obviously getting better as he gets older. He's 11-year-old now, but handling the occasion would be a big thing for him. He is quite a hot-headed horse. You remember him organising four or five false starts in an RSA 1 year? Maybe two, was it? He's definitely got a bit better as he's got a bit older. He was a good winner of the Bobby Joe the last day. Second album photo in Cork or in Tramore even. He could be one of those that you could see. He's 25-1. I wouldn't say he's massive value.
Okay. And others we should talk about, I suppose, there's Canelo, who's shown improved form this season when the Rowland Merrick third in the Grimthorpe will be the first time over the national fences for him.
Yeah, I thought it was a little unlucky in the Grimthorpe, actually. Looked like he was travelling really well into the straight, and the one in front got away on him, and he made a mistake at one of the early fences in the straight and couldn't quite get them back. I think a more competitive race will suit him. I think he could run a big race, yeah.
Okay, and how about Give Me a Copper? That horse, he ran in the Sky Bet last time out, pulled up after making a mistake, but had run really well prior to that at Doncaster.
Yeah, and his first run in Doncaster was after a good layoff, wasn't it? He hadn't run since the previous July and ran a blinder behind Rocky's Treasure. Didn't go for him in the Grimthorpe, but again, we just want more runs.
So should we come to a conclusion, Ruby? We've got to come to a conclusion, haven't we?
No. It's the Grand National, Lydia. The only conclusion you can come to is, no matter how many horses you fancy, you will more than likely pick the wrong one. And the only conclusion will be at 5:30 on Saturday when we know what's happened.
Does that mean you're not going to give me the winner of the Grand National?
I would love to give you the winner of the Grand National. I would actually love if it was any second now. I would be absolutely thrilled for my dad were he to win a second Grand National. But I just think there's so many horses you can make a case for. There are lots of horses I can't see winning, but there are still 20. If they win, I will think, yeah, that could have won.
Okay. Well, I hope you have been stimulated by Ruby's thoughts on the runners for the National and helped to make your own minds up. And we will find out who wins. What time is it on Saturday, Ruby?
The race is 5:15, so I reckon we'll know by 5:30. Give or take a few false starts and about 8 minutes to run it.
So there are plenty of other top-class races over the 3 days at Liverpool, and we can focus on them now. They're taking place on the Mildmay course, bar for three of them over the national fences. And let's talk what it takes to win on the Mildmay course, Ruby, because we've been talking all series about, you know, the difference between the old course and the new course at Cheltenham. We've just spoken about the national course. What is the particular character of the Mildmay course?
I don't think the Mildmay course is particularly complicated to ride, Lydia. It's level, it's two long straights, two nice bends. The bottom bend is obviously more sweeping than the bend past the stands. But entry sucks you into being on the pace. And as I said about the National, you don't see very many fast finishers. I think if you have to be there turning in an entry. It's a hard place to make up ground. And I've tried it every which way, thinking, well, if they're finishing slow, surely if I can finish quick, I'll catch up. But you don't tend to catch up because in order to go a gear or two slower with no undulations, you end up getting so far back that you can't possibly catch up. So it does pay to be as close to the pace as you can travel, and you have to be pretty close to them turning in.
Yeah, you need to hold your position, but you also need to jump accurately, don't you? I think this is always underestimated about the Mildmay course because there's no let-up in that kind of way. If you miss one, that's it.
It is, and even over hurdles. Mistake of the fifth last or the fourth last puts you in the wrong position going to the bend out of the back, and you end up moving out. And if you get pushed out, you can get pushed very wide in entry very quickly. And obviously, there's a lot of fences. And for a chaser, it's a good track for a good jumping chaser.
Okay. Well, we've had plenty of tweets and messages through our Facebook and Twitter pages to Racing TV asking us about particular races elsewhere on the meeting. So we'll let you guide us through the rest of the races and what you want to talk about. Dawn Spooner wants to talk about the Betway Bowl on Thursday. Some real legends running in what looks like a fantastic race, and we're lucky to be able to see these horses year on year. And tactically, it looks a very interesting race. John Joe O'Neill, of course, is back on Native River now that Richard Johnson has, of course, hung up his boots. John Joe O'Neill has won the Denman Chase on this horse. Native River wasn't quick enough, swift enough didn't have young enough legs to hold his position early on in the Gold Cup. Will he be able to dominate the Betway Bowl?
I think it's an easier race to try and do that in, because the start's at the bottom of the home straight. You have the whole length of the home straight to get Native River up into top gear. You have a much shorter time to try and get him into top gear in the Gold Cup, and it's much more competitive, much more competition even for the lead, with Frodon, Kenboy all going forward. Here in this race, there is no other obvious front runner. Tiger Roll might be ridden quite handily, but there's no other obvious front runner where John Joe could line up a little bit wide, even if there's one, and build Native River into that high cruising speed he has. It's just taking him longer and longer each run to get there. But the track should suit him to get to that.
You mentioned Tiger Roll. Obviously, he's a fantastic legend of a horse, 5 times the Cheltenham Festival winner, dual Grand National winner. But these are regulation fences, and he hasn't encountered them for a very long time. And to put it bluntly, is his form over regulation fences good enough for this level?
It's questionable. I don't think it is, but it's that long since we've seen him. How do we know? He was very good at the Cheltenham Festival in the cross-country race. But personally, I didn't ever think he was a grade one chaser myself. Maybe he is. Maybe he should have been running in these races instead of the Grand National. We'll find out on Thursday.
That low style of jumping that is so handy and useful in the Grand National, not so good in this circumstance?
Mightn't be. Mightn't be, but he did manage to get himself around in a National Hunt Chase and a Kerry National, or not Kerry National, the Munster National and whatever else he won. So he has figured out a way of getting from A to B, but I think the interesting one in the cheek pieces is definitely Tlandazobo. And I think if you watch him in Newbury, fourth last, he's 2 years having a look at it, the third last again, having a look at it, Secret Investors on his inside, he's jumping through the air, and Tlandazobo was kind of hanging in the air. He definitely didn't jump quick enough, or as quick as he can do, and we have seen him jump way better in the past. I didn't think he jumped particularly well in this year's King George either, and I think cheap pieces might bring about the required improvement in him to get him back in a winning tread.
Yeah, I think he like very much likes a flat track as well. I think for absolute ideal purposes, it would be a right-handed track, but he's run really well in this race before. He was second behind you on Kenboy in 2019. I went back and had a look at that, and he's just adjusting right and a bit slow through the air early on. He makes a mistake, I think, at the third. So, you know, that's the application of cheek pieces could just help him in the early stages and hold a better position.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think they definitely could.
Mr. Fisher is trying this trip for the first time, going up to 3 miles after just making a chance-ending error while Alaho was turning the screw in the Ryanair.
Yeah, I kind of think he made a couple of them though, Lydia. The ninth fence, he made a bad mistake at the 12th and again at the third last. And he raced quite keenly. But I can see him being ridden to settle here and get the trip. He could be interesting if he does that.
Yeah, I think he is an interesting player in this race. I think he could run really well. He might even win it. How about waiting patiently?
Yeah, look, she's a wonderful horse, but it's just so long since he's won a race, or a race of note anyway. But look, he's obviously quite fragile, but it's, what, February 18 since he beat Q Card? That's over 3 years ago.
And he still, for me, hasn't quite proven his stamina for this trip. I mean, I know he's finished second in the King George, but it was kind of a pick up the pieces, steadily run King George.
It was, yeah, definitely. Behind Frodon, and what, there was no real second either. He was beaten quite a long way.
Tom Livermore is interested in the Aintree Hurdle, and he's looking forward to seeing Bruin Up a Storm, who he thinks has looked very good since reverting to hurdling, and I'd like to see him progress this week. What's your idea of the win of the Aintree Hurdle?
Yeah, I think Bruin Up a Storm will confirm the form at McFavillis from Fontwell, actually. I'm watching Bruin Up a Storm in Taunton, and he won a handicap hurdle there. He was quite impressive, but I think this is just up a different level again. Plenty of pace in here. Not so sleepy. Jason and Militant, they're both front runners. Neither guaranteed to stay. Silver Streak in the same boat. And Abacadabra, he fell early in the champion hurdle, but he was second to Honeysuckle in the Irish champion hurdle. He's genuine. He is bordering on a grade one horse, Abacadabra, to be fair to him. And Song for Someone has to overcome Wincanton. He looks so lackluster on Wincanton. He never looked happy or looked lethargic, but I think 2.5 is more his cup of tea.
Yes, it looked like it was just, you know, generally too tight for him at Wincanton, didn't it, in the Kingwell. Abacadabra, he fell in at the third in the champion hurdle. What is it about that hurdle at Cheltenham, do you think?
Downhill. Downhill, the corner, start going a bit quicker, and just plenty of horses have fallen there.
Are you confident he'll stay?
I think he will. I think he'll have the pace to travel well, and he'll just be behind the pace, and Jack Kennedy won't commit him too early. I think he'll stay all right, Joe.
Early on in the card on the Thursday, there were a couple of other really interesting races. The Doombar Anniversary 4-year-old Juvenile Hurdle, and that features a fascinating matchup between the Triumph Hurdle second Adagio and Mon Miral, who's unbeaten for Paul Nicholls.
Yeah, Adagio gave Quilixius a good run, or a good race for it in Cheltenham. Quilixius got, you know, was dictating the race and set sail off the bend, and Adagio was the one who chased him hardest. But I've been really impressed with Mon Miral. He was good at Exeter first time up. I thought he was really good at Doncaster, and I thought he was brilliant at Haydock. They're both rated 147, but I'd be in the Mon Miral camp.
Yeah, you're preaching to the converted here. Can you give any chance to 5-20?
Won well at Musselburgh, but I think this is a big step up. Does get the fillies? No, it doesn't. It does get the fillies allowance. Yeah, 10-7. But no, I think this is a big step up.
Agree. And I'm interested in how John Locke runs. I don't think he'll win the race at all, but I thought he showed promise in the Adonis on his sole start so far. I'm interested in what he might be able to do next season. How about the manifesto that we opened the whole meeting with? That looks like a really good novice's chase over 2.5 miles.
It does. And, you know, Jashunta brings handicap form into it. I thought Eldorado Allen got a really good ride to be second in the Arkle, which probably flatters him a little bit. Protector, that's coming back from that poor disappointing run in the Dipper. Did we see him since the Dipper? I don't think we did. But I was disappointed with him in the Dipper. I thought Fusil Raffles was the one myself. I thought he was going a good gallop in the Marsh and was travelling really well till Sham Blue took it off him and blew that race apart. And he ultimately got outstayed. I think the easier 2.5 would suit him. He likes good ground. And Fusil Raffles do me.
Yeah, he is really interesting. Do you think Eldorado will like the trip? Will that suit him better than the Arkle trip?
Yeah, I think it will definitely suit him better. But just think he was flattered in Cheltenham.
And Hitman, of course, has been laid out for this.
He has been laid out for it. Obviously fell in the... What's the race in Sandown he fell in?
The Scilly Isles, is it?
The Scilly Isles, that's the one. Beat Captain Cuckoo then at Newbury since. Yeah, he's a pretty decent horse, second to All Mankind in the Henry VIII. But we saw how far behind All Mankind was and the Arkle. So I don't know if Hitman's form strong enough.
And we have seen Protectorat since the Dipper at Wincanton. He went to Kelso and put in that low-level performance. And so hence he's had a wind operation, an operation to correct his breathing, and he's wearing the first-time tongue tie as well.
There's question marks about him now, isn't there?
Yeah. Is the Shunter good enough for this level?
I don't know. He was a really impressive winner at Cheltenham, but I always felt there was a big difference between handicaps and graded grade ones, genuine graded company. Like, would Fusil Raffles have done the same job in the handicap the Shunter ran in? I think he would have.
Okay. I'm not going to underestimate the Shunter.
No, neither am I. And the trajectory that he's on. But you'd like to think off a mark of 140, Fusil Raffles, Eldorado Allen, any of the older horses in this race would have done the same thing.
Now, Conor Stroud has been in touch and he thinks it was an interesting call on the part of Jeremy Scott to bypass Cheltenham with Dashiell Drasher. And I can see that being rewarded with another grade one in the Marsh Chase on Friday. That's the Melling in Old Money. He doesn't think the quicker ground worry him at all and looks a quality act. What are your thoughts about Dashiell Drasher and the Marsh Chase brackets the Melling in general?
He's an improving horse, Lydia, and he was very good at Ascot. He took on Suriname and beat Master Tommy Tucker. But I think Politolog is the one to beat here. He was second to Min a couple of years ago. He beat Min the year before that. Obviously banged his head before the champion chase. Didn't get to run and take his chance. Hasn't run since he was second in the Tingle Creek. And I think he's the one to beat myself. I think he likes the entry. He's shown in the past he can handle less. And I think he's a fresh horse.
It's interesting that entry for Notebook in this race.
Yeah, it is. Stepping up in trip. Could be interesting, yeah, could be.
It's a meeting that Henry de Bromhead often does well with, and it'd be if that opens a horizon for Notebook, that could be pretty good. I can see the track suiting him.
Yeah, but it's worth a chance because he's been found wanting at grade one level at 2 miles, so you have to try something new with him.
Earlier on that same Friday card is the Betway Mildmay Novices Chase, and it sees Chantry House going up to 3 miles, who might have been a fortunate winner of the Marsh Novices Chase at the Cheltenham Festival.
Possibly, but look, you have to jump to win. And I think going up in triple really suit this horse. if you watch him away from the water jump behind Sean Blue and Fusa Raffles in the marsh, he was flat to the boards and he looked to be all the way down the back straight to the pin of his collar pace-wise. To me, he looks like a horse that will improve going up and trip, and I think 3 miles will bring about that improvement in him. I thought he was a good winner on the day.
There's the Brown Advisory second and third, Fiddler on the Roof and the Big Breakaway. Any chance?
They have squeaks. Definitely both came back to showing something like their true form at the Cheltenham Festival. And the Big Breakaway went and took on Monkfish, and Fiddler on the Roof picked up the pieces. But look, yeah, if they both bring that run, they have a squeak. But I was impressed with Chantry House, and I think distance will improve Chantry House.
And will Chamblot have got over his exertions in the marsh?
You'd be surprised if he has.
Later on the same card, the Doombar Sefton Novices Hurdle. That's a grade one over 3 miles. I really like this race for some reason. But Brave Man's Game is stepping up to that 3 miles. That'll suit him, surely, won't it?
Yeah, it will. You know, Bob Ballinger and Gaillard de Mesnil just proved too good for him at the Cheltenham Festival. He does look like a horse that will improve a trip. And even watching him winning in Newbury, the further he went down the straight that day, the faster he was going. He looks like a stayer, and this will be a good way to finish off his campaign.
Agree. Moving on to the Saturday, we see Shishkin again, one of the most exciting winners over the Cheltenham Festival. He heads for the Doombar Maghill Novices Chase, again over 2 miles. Anything to beat him? Anything to challenge him?
I don't think so. You know, All Mankind is in there. Tamrock, the Matan, Gunball. Should be plenty of pace on again. He jumped really well at the Cheltenham Festival. No, I think he'll win. It's not like he's 1-6. Not that hard to say he's going to win, is it?
It really isn't. Just be fabulous to see him again. And the race that succeeds it is the Ryanair Stayers Hurdle. That's the Liverpool Hurdle again to you and I. And it sees the horse that you liked all season for Cheltenham, who unfortunately missed it with a setback, Time Hill.
Yeah, and he's going to take on horses who all ran at the Cheltenham Festival, Lisnagar, Oscar, Beacon Edge, Roxana, Sarah de Burla, Paisley Park, if they all run. And he's just has that bit of freshness that they don't have. Whatever setback he had, hopefully he's over that. Tom O'Brien will take over on him. Big day for him. But look, I was a fan of Time Hills before, and I still am.
That's the point you make about horses that might leave a race behind at the Cheltenham Festival. That's so difficult for punters from the outside to have a clue about, isn't it? Because it just depends on the horse.
It does. And some horses can take it, others can't. And I think... What do I think? I think you can... But some people with maybe lesser horses target an entry... can achieve a lot. It's a bit like the Triple Crown, really, isn't it, when you think about it? Like the Belmont Stakes can often be the weakest leg for the horse that have ran in the first two. Meeting a fresh horse on the last leg can be difficult for them to beat, and I think if you can forego Cheltenham and target Aintree, you might have a chance of beating one of the big guns.
And that's certainly something that happens at Punchestown as well sometimes, isn't it?
It can do, yeah, it can do. And look, it takes good horses to win at all those festivals. And only the best do it.
And what do we feel about the calibre of Aintree over the 3 days? Do you still feel it's holding up? Because obviously we've just come fresh from that utter domination by the Irish at the Cheltenham Festival, but Irish trained horses don't come over, and traditionally don't, in the same numbers for Aintree.
No, they don't. They support it. There will still be plenty of runners, but traditionally it's about the Grand National for the Irish horses. But look, we had Fairy House earlier this week as well, and lots of good racing there. So, Aintree, look, it's still a very competitive meeting, Lydia. Most things are cyclical. It will turn back around.
We could probably spend a whole series talking about that conundrum and how we could turn that around. But for now, that is the end of our preview of the 3 days of the Randox Grand National Festival, in which Ruby has not given you a Grand National. But has guided you through his thoughts of the race and also on many of the others. Thank you very much, Ruby. I hope you enjoy the 3 days of Aintree.
And you too.
And I hope you do all at home as well. And if you want to find out more, go to the racingtv.com website. There'll also be a column for the Grand National. That's racingtv.com/Road to Aintree. But thank you very much for watching this Road to Aintree special. We will see you again soon. We'll be right back.